I had to replace the little GoPro that I used to bring to county council and all. Somebody decided they liked it more than I did and stole it out the car. So this is the replacement. That's a refurbished job that I got. Let's see, what I paid $100 for that. A new one's almost $400. So, but, you know, us Jewish people got to stick together.
Max Burger?
Yeah.
I went over to the State House one time, way back when they were having flag issues, and I made a kippa out of a helmet liner. I just cut the top of it out and put some tape on it. Both sides were sticky, so it would stick to my head. Put on a little black jacket and pretended to be a Jew in favor of our flag.
Right, right.
And a friend of mine came along and he didn't recognize me. He thought I was a Jew. So a real Jew came along and wanted to know what my name was. I told him it was Weberberger.
Weberberger.
I think he knew. He could tell.
So that was a protest to for the American, for the Confederate flag.
Keep it up.
So you said Jews for a Confederate flag?
Well, actually, they wore some.
Yeah.
Judah Benjamin was high up in the cabinet, and he was a Jew. So some people say he enriched himself in all of the process, but I used to be in a book club that went to a synagogue. I was going to the synagogue for the book club. And they had a kind of a connection between two rooms, glass cabinets. And they had artifacts and things in there about Judah Benjamin. They were kind of proud of him. And one of the ladies that was a Jew, I was saying something about being Southern, and she said, "Well, I'm Southern too."
Yeah.
If a government claims a right, and then their claim is that they derive these rights from the people.
Right.
Well, how can people give a group rights that they don't themselves have?
To steal from each other.
Right. If we can't tax people, like I can't tax you, where exactly does government derive this right from? Once you come to, you realize that the goal ought to be as voluntary a society as possible. Now, how exactly you achieve that, how far you can push that is debatable, but certainly that should be the goal. That if government is providing a service for you, well then why does it need to be provided by force?
So yesterday, when me and Ben Blair, and Ben Blair, he's got a head full of history. He's been a college professor, and he can translate several languages. Problem with Ben is once you get him started, it's hard to get him stopped. And he'll end up telling you what Cleopatra's cat's name or something like that, something really. But I was thinking about you and him. You might could do something with him, but you'd have to have the time set and giving him clues about down to 5 minutes now, Ben, 4 minutes, 3 minutes. Because he would just keep on and on and on.
Yeah, because history never ends.
Yeah, but he's really good. He really is on his history. Southern history, American history, foreign history, all kinds of stuff.
So he's just a master of history, history bug. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how some people have different gifts for whatever it might be. Well, and he found that little niche. Some people don't ever find their niche. Mm-hmm. They're just fumbling around looking, or they're miserable in what they're doing to begin with.
Well, you see him around town, kind of shuffling along, looking down usually, wearing a suit and tie. He's bald-headed mostly, but he's wearing a hat now. Because he's thinking as he's walking, he's thinking about something.
Right.
So, yeah. If you'd like, I'll bring him around sometime.
Yeah.
He was in a wreck years ago down in Charleston. So Hispanic black woman, I guess, without any insurance, totally scarred and put Ben in the hospital. And he hasn't gotten anything out of it other than they paid his hospital bills.
Hmm.
They should have. The lawyers are eating it up.
Yeah.
They're still eating it up.
Uninsured motorists like that, no, they don't have anything to go
out. She did. She owned houses and things. Huh. Probably came over here from somewhere and didn't have much of anything except what the government gave her. And she built on it. So she owned several things and they put a lien on some of it.
Right.
And so Ben is getting his hospital care. But he doesn't really need the hospital for a long time now. But he has issues. Things are wrong with him. So.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like me and that leg.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. See, what do you get out of it? You crippled the rest of your life.
And, yeah.
You know, the hospital bills may or may not get paid for. And, but you keep going on. Mm. Yeah. So tell me about Confederates Day.
Well, it started at 11 o'clock yesterday, Saturday. It's a little smaller than it has been. It keeps shrinking. There weren't as many reenactors there. Probably altogether about 30. But there had been maybe 130 or something.
Yeah, I remember going to it a number of years ago at your invitation, and there was a decent amount of people marching down the road.
Yeah, they used to have a march up to the Capitol. They don't do that anymore. And the only thing they do at the Capitol is they have a prayer vigil early, and then they go around to Elmwood Cemetery and have the regular ceremony. So they had several people speak, and it was about 150 people altogether. So it wasn't too poorly attended.
All right.
Several people that I know that I expected to see there didn't show up. But I was in my uniform with my Confederate flag. And they had a speaker tell about, well, they had several speakers tell, but what stuck with me a little bit was about an old man who was arrested by the Yankees for being a spy. But they got the wrong guy. It was his daughters. They were pretty daughters. And so they were always listening for some of the Yankee soldiers, Yankee officers would come around and they'd cook for them. And this was right on the line, just very close to the line. And so one of them overheard something about how they were going to sail up the river and it was going to do something. And something on the other side of St. Augustine. They were going to do something, and it was at dark. And so she had two sisters that entertained them while she was gone. And she hopped on a horse and took out through the woods and crossed the river and got to the southern camp. And the picket said, who are you? What are you doing here? You know, kind of thing. But it was somebody she knew slightly. And so he got her in to speak to the right person. And it messed up the Yankees, what they were going to do. They lost one of their gunboats because of it.
You see that in a lot of different ways in different wars, too.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's the women.
Yeah. And even after the wars, UDC, you know, the Southern women, they put up those monuments. It wasn't the guys that did it.
Yeah. Yeah. You see that all around the state, the little placards. What is it? The Daughters of the Confederacy.
United Daughters of the Confederacy.
Right, right, right.
Mm-hmm. So that went on for a while. It always seems to go on too long. But they ended up with shooting a volley with their rifles, and they had three cannons, and they shot them, I think, twice, two or three times. Mm-hmm. And I always like the cannons.
Yeah, yeah, I do too.
So after that, me and Ben Blair, went up to the State House, and I was going to stand on the Gervais Street side with my flag and uniform just to see what kind of response I got. But they had some protesters there protesting the loss of the Palestinians' land, I guess. In a way, they're kind of like Southerners, that things happened where we lost a lot. We still have a country, but they kind of lost theirs.
Yeah.
Way back in biblical times, the Israelites wandering, you know, they took what they came across and said, God gave us this. Well, the Palestinians still disagree.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, some of the Palestinians are Christian, but they're being suppressed.
Yeah. Yeah, they recently Israel bombed one of the oldest Christian churches in the Middle East, in Gaza. Killed a bunch of people and all, and the place was from way, way back, you know. They have no regard for whether you're Christian, Muslim, old, young, male or female.
Well, of course, the Israelites wandering in the desert, coming across cities and other people, they, in some occasions, they said, we'll kill them all. Even the dogs and cats, everything. So they've been brutal. Both sides have been really brutal. So we walked up to this pop-up tent right on Gervais Street, and I could see kind of what was going on.
Gervais, right in front of the state capitol building.
Yep.
And Maine hits right into it.
Yep.
Where the big Christmas tree is every year.
Yeah, right there. And because that's where I wanted to stand with my flag. And
yeah, the abortion guy used to stand up there all the time. The anti-abortion guy.
I've seen one there.
Yeah.
I've been there with other signs.
Tom, you've always been like the protester. Sign, costume. Here in Camden, down in, at the State House, it just amazes me the different ways that you have of communicating an idea to the general public.
Yeah. Well, I'm not giving up. Not at all. I was set back a little bit by my shingles, but I'm pretty well over it.
Yeah, yeah.
But Ben Blair went over to talk to the people. A cop that was there wouldn't let me anywhere close to him. But I told him I kind of agree with him, I think. But Ben talked to some of them, and I went on down Gervais to Assembly Street. And like I was telling you, it was pretty good. It was about a 2-to-1, or maybe a little bit higher, favorable to what I was doing. White guy coming across the street, young fella, we bumped knuckles, you know, and several people in cars rolled the window down to give him thumbs up.
All right.
And some beeps that were not, you can tell the difference between a good beep and a bad beep, and all I got was good beeps. But I did get two or three middle fingers, and but not near as much as I had in years gone by when the university was in session. It was out of session during COVID, and the people that came by were kind of kind to me. But when the university crowd came back, they gave me a lot of middle fingers. But this time it was different. It was some young people that were supportive. I figure they're getting tired of this wokeism.
Yeah.
Some of them, anyway.
Yeah, it seems to be cracking on the edges. This idea that you have to be accepting of every kind of gender fluidity and just Marxist ideas and socialism and all that, and they're seeing like the student loan thing. They're seeing through it and seeing how government has inflated everything to the point that a college education now, you have to borrow from a government guaranteed loan of $500,000 to get some kind of real degree. That doesn't mean that much.
The real degrees are, I know somebody got a degree in music, and they can get one in history, and you get one in all kind of things
that
don't really warrant the investment.
Mm-hmm.
I should have gone to a trade school. I went 2 years at USC, glad for all the education I got. But I dropped out and got drafted, and that was better. Went to Vietnam, and that was better.
Oh, God.
It really was. So,
when were you in Vietnam?
I was there from August 67 to August
68. Okay. My dad was there from 68 to 69 at Phan Rang. He was Air Force. You were a grunt, weren't you?
Well, I was infantry, but I didn't actually get in the field, but very little, just very little.
Right.
Had a talent for radio repair. Had a good course at AC Flora. It was a new school, and Sputnik had just gone up. They were pushing math and science, and that was kind of my thing. So electronics course was really good. It was hard with a lot of math, but I had an A+ at the end of the year. And so I went on to USC chemical engineering, but I was, I guess you could say, kind of burned out. Waited too long, and I had too much extraneous stuff. I shouldn't have taken advanced German. I got through it. Shouldn't have taken philosophy, but I still guess I benefited from it. Shouldn't have taken English. I mean, I've been taking English all these years. So I went back after Vietnam on the GI Bill and went to a lady who brought up my records and said, oh, you'll have to take English again. So I said, the hell with that, and walked away. But she was telling me that, she was telling me back in the days, there's a lot of protests going on, you know, the war and all,
right,
that a Coke bottle doesn't make a good Molotov cocktail. You need to use a beer bottle.
Oh.
She was telling me that.
That's interesting.
Anyway, I probably should have gone on and got more education. But I'm glad for what I got. And it came in handy in Vietnam. So I got to work on radios. I never even looked at a radio, a Jeep-mounted radio. So at Fort Benning, I got in a flying club for one thing. Thought I'd like to fly for the Army, but they like to get somebody who didn't know how to fly and teach them from the beginning. Anyway, they needed somebody to fix big old heavy amplifiers, old World War II equipment, had tubes in it. And so I worked in the shop part of the time before that. I'd been a driver. You've seen MASH before,
yeah,
the movie. They had these Jeeps with the part that came over the top.
Right, right.
So I drove one of those with loaded with electronics and pulling a generator, go out into the field at Fort Benning and set it up for teaching OCS. So I got to see some really interesting teaching. But they needed somebody in the shop to work on the amplifiers, and so they tried me, and I could do it. So they gave me what they call an MOS, temporary MOS, military occupational status.
Right.
Of 31E20, that's field radio repairman. When I got to Vietnam, they sent me around for an interview. I thought they would always tell a guy what he's going to do. They wouldn't ask him what he wanted to do. But they sent me for an interview and asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, well, I passed a little radio shop on the way over here. I'd like to work there. And they said, okay.
Golly. So you got to pick where you went.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about radios. I got the manual and about Army radios and transmitters. So I got the manual and read it. And got to be the chief radio repairman. And when I was leaving, a sergeant came to me and he said, you're not a radio repairman. I said, too late, Sarge. I'm going home.
I are one now.
So I learned a lot. I learned electronics that I wouldn't have learned otherwise. Transmitters.
Right.
Had good equipment. Had to go back at night sometimes. And tinker, just working on my own stuff mostly.
Yeah, yeah. Is that where you got the tinkering from? Well, or were you a tinkerer?
I was always was a tinkerer.
Yeah.
And my daddy was too. Inherited that. Funny, sometimes when I see my hands doing something, it's my daddy's hands.
Yeah. And the older you get, the more you realize that those are his hands. I do the same thing. I look down and I can see my age and see how, I don't know, it's a different feeling when I look down. Through my eyes, I'm younger than what I see in front of me.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting to me, how that works. And I've heard older people, when I was younger, say that. Mm-hmm. And you never really understand it until you get older and you're incapable of doing the things that you used to do like you did them. Mm-hmm. And then you look down and you say, great goodness, I got granddaddy's skin.
Yep.
And now I know exactly what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, I can remember him working on something. We were working on something. I was a young, I guess I was in my 20s, early 30s, and it was the last couple of years of his life, and he was talking about, oh, he'd pull out his snot rag, and he'd say, my nose, it will not quit running, and I can't get my hands, I can't do what I used to do, I can't do it anymore, and all. And those last couple of years of his life, he said that so often. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm 64, which is not really old, but I see those things coming on. Mm-hmm. I can't do what I used to do. I can't get down on the floor anymore. My knees, somebody got to help me up. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting thinking about how that age creeps up on you.
Well, I have a poem that relates to that.
Oh, great. The poem. I love Tom's poems.
Well, let's see if I got it here. Yeah, it's called, I have to have my glasses on. I don't see it.
I had to get permanent glasses around age 50, and my grandfather was wiser than I, and he told me one time, he said, I'm going to tell you something, son. The Lord makes two things on a human body that continues to grow all their life. And I said, well, what is that, granddaddy? He said, well, it's your ears and your nose. And the reason why is he knows you're going to need glasses.
Well, I need glasses and a hearing aid. It's getting bad. This poem is called Time is Out of Kilter, or maybe I'm getting like Joe. It's been a blurry, blurring blur, time a-going too fur too fast, a dream half forgotten, sometimes it seems. But I'm inclined to ask, whatever happened to Halloween? I had my Kamala mask for trick-or-treating, but everywhere I went, everyone was eating turkey and cranberry sauce. And I guess I got the date all wrong, so I'm feeling kind of lost. Well, time used to go so slow when I was just a child, waiting for Christmas, waiting for Christmas, waiting for Santa Claus. But the calendar's going wild, I think you probably know. Now the new year's moving on, and other days will soon be gone. With a groundhog in my Valentine's and St. Patty in an Easter play, all piled up in a jumble, cause time is out of kilter, a wiltering as I mumble, and there's not much left to say. So I will get ahead of myself and do it right this time around. My New Year's resolution is just now coming down. It's something I'm going to try, buy some flags and a watermelon and a big old apple pie, cause tomorrow might be the 4th of July.
Sleepy Joe.
It's supposed to be a little lighthearted, but I had to get in a kick against Kamala and Joe.
Yeah. It's kind of a joke.
Yeah.
It really shows that whoever's behind the Resolute desk really doesn't matter anymore. Somebody else is pulling the strings.
Yeah.
And the whole republic has been sold, bought and paid for. It's sad, but I don't know that it can be saved at this point, because of the people who have been indoctrinated to the point now that they don't give a damn anymore.
Well, the people that want to lead us, to step up to lead, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know the Constitution. And I know you don't think too highly of it, and there are things about it that I would like to change. But we can't be true anarchists. We can want to be anarchists. We can't truly be anarchists as really accepting a state of affairs like that, unless we're all angels. We got to have some regulations. But not too much, and I got a poem about that.
Yeah, and we'll get to that one. Yeah. But yeah, this is always the debate that that people get into when they, what is minimum government? And one of the things that
well, we should be going that way rather than going the other way. That would be the kind of anarchy that I favor.
Yeah.
Because we'll never quite get there. We'll always be lacking. We'll need some regulation. But we should have less and less of it instead of more and more of it.
Yeah, we're going the opposite way from minimum government or anarchy. And we're going toward maximum collectivism and totalitarianism, authoritarianism, and all the other isms that you don't like. Communism and socialism and ultimately those lead to democide, where the government kills their own. All of them lead to that. Eventually, the bigger they get, the more power they get. Even this government now kills American people. And the chains that were put on it, quote unquote, have not been able to hold it at all. And incrementally over 250 years now, it's just been eaten away, and the people dumbed down and given more manna from heaven, if you will, government being heaven, to the point now that they're addicted to it.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of singing a little ditty for the next council, because I'm still going to speak about the litter ordinance that really outlaws some things. It outlaws cans, so I'm going to turn in a can. I took my cans last time, but they had so much going on. I spoke about it and told them kind of what I was going to do, but I'll take my cans and go back home and see you next time.
Yeah, I saw that. That was so good.
But I was thinking I might sing them something like, you are poor little lambs who led astray. Ba, ba, ba. Poor little lambs. And, you know, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And because I think they are. They really are. There's some nice people on county council. And I would say that your friend, Derek Shoemake, is not as nice as he seems. He's smart. He's got talent. But he's misused it, in my opinion, with this ordinance. We get to see who he really is. And he is a misleader. He's misleading the poor little lambs. And they don't know it.
Yeah.
They look up to him because he's been a prosecutor or a lawyer, and he's kind of taken the place of Julian Burns.
Yeah, it seems to be the one that brings the state regulation and all in, and then everybody else listens to the hierarchy, the preacher, if you will, and follows along. I see that. I see that in the new housing ordinances and all that. You see, just like you were saying, he's the one that brought up the litter thing. Mm-hmm. He seems to be the one that brings forth these things. And we know that most of these ordinances are copied and pasted from other ordinances in other places, mm-hmm. and then brought together. And he seems to be good at that. And so does his boss, Mr. Ben Connell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ben's at the State House and all. I guess he's running for re-election this year. I don't know. I don't keep track of that much anymore. But Ben was a lot the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so him and Julie Burns would play tag team. And now you see Derek Shoemake as the strong man, mm-hmm. kind of. And everybody else kind of playing along.
Yeah, as I would say, the poor little lambs.
Yeah, yeah. And Matt has made this point, I've made this point several times and all, that I think most of them are doing what they consider to be good.
Mm-hmm. But not Derek Shoemake. He tried to explain away that sentence in the litter ordinance that would allow a deputy or anybody who's given authority to come on your property without your permission. And anything he said from now on, I would doubt it. I wouldn't want anything to do with it. That settles it for me. The guy is wrong.
Yeah.
He's wrong-minded, and he could do anything. It's just... And it shows up in the rest of the ordinance that outlaws cardboard, glassware,
crockery,
a flower pot that I turned in, cans, mm-hmm. and allows bedding.
That is the strangest thing.
Yeah.
You know, so you can have a mattress out front, but you can't have a can.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of crazy.
Well, it's almost like he's rubbing our nose in it, but I see... At first, I wondered what it was. I thought maybe it's just so many words to cover that sentence where a man with a gun can come on your property without permission. I thought that's what it was. But it's by far worse than that. It's by far worse.
Yeah.
Because you got somebody sitting behind a desk wearing a suit and tie who is telling you what you can have.
Yeah.
As though that's supposed to come from government? No.
Yeah.
They might can tell you sometimes what you can't have, but not what you can have.
Yeah.
What else will they give us out of the benevolence of their cheating little hearts?
Yeah. And this redoing of all the zoning and everything, he is the main driver of all this.
Yeah.
I think he has... the globalist mentality.
Yep.
Of collectivist ideas of government is smarter than everybody else and can control everything, can micromanage everything to make it better. You look at his housing regulations and all. 15,000 square feet for a house, and they come up with arbitrary numbers, you know.
Well, and according to the paper, he said that he would like for it to be an acre.
Yeah.
Well, that would help, but Brazel was against that, and Katie, because of townhouses, whatever that is, and apartments. We need some of that. We need affordable housing. I don't know how much we need of that. I mean, affordable housing is kind of a catchphrase for people who are on the government dole.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, that's almost synonymous term now. it's kind of like sustainable development.
Yeah.
And talk about that, you know, and it's sugar plums and lollipops. And then when you actually open up that can, sustainable development actually means restricting humans. Human access, human farming, all those things. Net zero is about constricting human activities to the point where everything, nature can have nature all around you and you can't go see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm in the landowners organization, forest landowners, and we meet once every 3 months. And the last meeting was, I think it was Monday. And Laurie Funderburk, I think, arranged for our speaker. He was a young fella, and he wanted to talk about things like carbon dioxide as a pollutant.
Mm.
And he's showing us some graphs. He had a presentation showing us some graphs of you plant your trees, and when they get old, you know, mature, you harvest them. And you do this again and again. That's the graph. But he said we need another graph above that. You don't harvest quite all of them. You leave some there, and then you drop down and you plant and you leave some again. So I spoke up and said, it looks to me like where this is going, it's only going to get more and more of that. We're going to have beautiful forests, but we'll only be able to harvest our dead trees.
Yeah.
And I told him he probably having too much college, has been in college too long to believe that carbon dioxide is a pollutant.
Yeah, that's been the dogma for quite a while now. And net zero, zero CO2 emissions.
Well, there's a way to get around it to decrease CO2 if they're really intense about it, and that is wood. If you plant trees, they take up carbon dioxide, and then you cut them down and you put them in a big tank and you heat them. Actually, wood, you heat it to a certain temperature, and then it's exothermic. It goes through a reaction. It actually gives up heat, and it will decompose, leaving charcoal, mm-hmm. and giving off smoke. And the smoke can be used for fuel. But you got all the charcoal left. You can do whatever you want with that, mm-hmm. and sequester it. You don't have to have it in underground tanks or anything. You just pile it up somewhere.
You look at over the millions and millions of years and all, when CO2 levels were much, much, much higher than what it is now. You know, the planet was just overwhelmed with greenery and everything. You know, climate warming, climate cooling, climate change, yeah, it always does.
Yep.
And that's the great big boogeyman. They want you to fear. And then, like the Club of Rome put out, that in the end, after their little report and everything, climate disaster, in the very end, it is humanity itself that is the enemy.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Club of Rome is made up of a bunch of eugenicists anyway.
Mm-hmm. And Bill Gates is not going to back away from population control.
No.
And I think that that Shoemake might be one of them.
Come on. There's several here in the Camden area, the Kershaw County area, mm-hmm. that are like that, mainly environmentalist. They hide behind what a lot of people have coined now the green mask.
Hmm.
And when you pull that green mask off, it's red. And that's how a lot of people are suckered into this, because everybody wants clean water. Everybody wants clean air. Everybody wants clean food. Well, not really. Not everybody. They like Taco Bell and all that kind of stuff. But some people want clean food.
Well, some people want us to eat bugs.
Yeah, easy bugs, he says.
But let them eat bugs.
Yeah. But you see this at coming in at your local level with such things as the Veterans Park, the property up on the lake up there that they bought that 120 acres and all, and their talk about making a grand corridor from the coast all the way up to the mountains and all, and then you overlay an Agenda 21 nationwide map over it, and guess what? The depopulated areas that the Agenda 21 map shows just so happens coincides with what the hell these people want with their greenways, bike paths, and all that. Yeah. That went into the Vision 2030 or Vision 2020 to begin with, that Julie Burns brought in 2017, I guess, was when he was first elected, or 2015. And then that expanded into Vision 2030. And then the United Nations got their Vision 2030, which if you look at the two visions, our local vision and the UN Vision 2030, damn if they ain't just alike.
Hmm. Well, there's another one. UN likes to take over our cultural centers,
heritage sites.
Yeah. And so there's talk of, and see, Ralph Norman.
That's our representative.
And
congressional representative.
Yeah, and two Democrats, Clyburn and Thomas something or other. I can't remember his last name. Rice, maybe. They met at Historic Camden, and they gave a little blurb, little thing for the newspaper. It's been a couple of years ago. They are pushing for connecting all of the heritage sites, the Revolutionary War parks, mm-hmm. connecting them all from North Carolina through South Carolina, all the way down to the coast, and having a buffer zone 8 miles wide, mm-hmm. 8 miles wide, 4 miles to either side of their path will be under some government control as to what you can have and what you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured it out. It seemed like it was 1,600 square miles, what it amounts to,
all right.
of our property that's going to be under eventually UN control.
Yeah.
That with the Treaty of the Sea, any water that's anywhere that comes up a river and any tributary.
Yeah. They've changed it from navigable to all waters.
Mm-hmm. So you keep laying these things on top of each other, and the area that we can live in keeps shrinking.
Yeah. Yeah, and the same thing with all these zoning laws and everything. I venture to guess that the growth, the spurts of growth that we've seen, especially over the last 20 years, since 2008 and all that, was caused by low interest rates directed by the Federal Reserve. And through Freddie and Fannie Mac, all this easy money going in and all the builders expanding because everybody wants to build the American dream. And so they naturally create the problem of overcrowding and then get the reaction from the people saying, oh, we don't want all this and everything. And then here comes Derek Shoemake saying, you're right. I swear you're right. Let's put this in.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it's problem, reaction, solution. In order to get the solution that they already predetermined that they wanted. And so incrementally, they'll get one more regulation, and another regulation to where you'll have to mow your grass three times a week or break the law.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's already come up. We had somebody come up from Orangeburg to tell us how our regulations should be here in Kershaw County. I kept referring to the young lady as comrade.
Yeah. So but she loves Camden, is why she was here. Because yeah. I love Camden. but that the thing is that this stuff comes from the top and then trickles down through the system, and the grants and all the regulations and all lead people down the Mary Trail, lead the lambs to the slaughter. Just like what you were singing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I agree with globalism and the New World Order a little bit. I think we can't have too many people. I think so. If you want to have, the more people you have, the more you're going to have pollution. You're going to have to tighten your belt a little bit. You get more people, you tighten your belt a little bit more. More people, you tighten it more. What are we going to put up with? If we didn't have immigration, if we didn't pay people to have babies, then our population wouldn't be growing. We'd be at a very manageable population level. So I'm in favor of population reduction, but not by killing off people, not at all. Just let's leave the people who have too many children, the Catholics, the Hispanics. Leave them in Mexico or wherever they're coming from. Let them have all the children they want. Just have them down there. Don't bring them up here. Our population is growing because of immigration.
Oh yeah. Americans across the board, we're actually not reproducing at a
replacement.
Yeah. We're at like 1.4 or something like that. 1.4
well,
kids.
To me, it sounds real good. I like it.
Well, I mean, eventually you get to the point where you don't have anybody.
Well, but, no, it wouldn't, because as the population decreases and people spread out a little bit, you don't have as many crowding. No. People will have more children.
Well, worldwide, we're looking at the exponential curve. If you look at the trend over the last 20 years, it has already started to decline. So now we're in a population decline in general around the globe.
Not in this country.
Well, the immigration problem is just a color revolution driven by the puppet masters to homogenize the whole world. And in the American case, to completely overwhelm the system to bring in a totalitarian state. And Cloward and Piven of the Chicago School, or the main designers of this, what we see in America right now. And, you know, of course, the Biden administration and previous administrations have helped this all the way back to Reagan and amnesty to begin with.
But that was,
you
had a deal, but the other side didn't.
Well, I believe it's all a clown show. Okay. Just to keep you down playing the game. The plantation, the slaves of Slavelandia are playing which puppet do you want to choose. And they give you, and it has to be a fairly stark difference in the puppets, but when you get it, when they get in, there might be a little tick this way and a tick that way, but in general, that machine's still going to grow and still going to beat you down.
I visualize it as a Punch and Judy show. You know, you got the lion on one hand, and the other puppet is a tiger, and they get into some argument. But there's somebody behind it that's operating them.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the same thing, the same thing.
Well, you mentioned regulations. Were you ready for another poem?
Oh, yeah.
The distant past remains in lessons passed along, evolving with the ancients and judging right from wrong. The wisdom of those times is written in our minds and stays a little raw till it's copied down and found in books as the nature of the law. Though we all need a clue or two for keeping right and running true, nothing overdoes it all like regulations do. In much the way of weeds a regulation grows, choking out the laws we love with legal verse and prose. Too many rules are made by fools and people we can't trust, but all we usually do these days is cuss them in disgust. It would have been so natural once to tar and feather the whole bunch, but the law we love from up above tells us to be careful of emotions running wild. Us peasants couldn't rule ourselves, not for very long, without a constitution that's good and right and strong. It's our king in written words our founding fathers gave us, and a better moral master will never come to save us. So learn it, teach it, and preach it, especially the Bill of Rights, and we'll regulate the regulators till we turn out all their lights.
Tom, that's a great one right there. I think that a damn... With that, I think then we'll wrap that up.
Okay.
I enjoyed it, Tom. Mm-hmm. As always.
Well, I got one more.
Oh, great like goodness. One more.
Yep.
Called, I told Tom. That,
and this was written for the Irish month. You know, so it should be done with a little bit of Irish twang.
Right. Well, I don't have any Irish. Well, I got some in me somewhere down the road. They tell me anyway, but I don't have an accent except for the country accent my God.
Yeah. Well, I got somebody from Drumbo County Down in my ancestry. So it's in here. It's called Abraham. Abraham. Born in Drumbo, County Down, when I was very young, and being Irish through and through, the blarney played upon me tongue. And there was famine all over the place, and the English might have had a hand. Though the Irish can drink and fight for sure, the blight was in the land. So we booked a trip on a mighty ship bound for New York Harbor, when the plans of mice and men alike go wrong before tomorrow. My uncle had a pet, you see, as tame as Gilligan's wee little rooster, and nearly twice as mean. And they got their kicks playing silly tricks on Abraham, their very own devil, so to speak. For Abraham loved shenanigans too, a little too extreme. And like his Irish owner, he grew up tough and lean. Then Abraham, he knocked me over when I was 5 and he was 4, and rolled me all around to eat the buttons off my coat and wouldn't let me off the ground. My daddy broke a shillelagh stick over that billy goat's head, and all it did was inflame his ire to give it back instead. Abraham stood on his 2 back feet, as tall as any man, and came down hard on daddy's leg and broke it like a banshee can. I thought I heard a leprechaun laugh at our family's grave misfortune, for our trip across the ocean was canceled on the spot, and only me brothers Patty and Mickey went ahead with dreams to dream to get whatever they got. They died in Lincoln's war, and we never quite knew quite why, and Mama's tears never quite dried since her tearful last goodbye. Then Abraham didn't fare too well, to say the very least, and there was nothing else to do, so that's his head above the door, and we ate him in a stew. A sign proclaims it's Lincoln's head, with his presidential goatee and Satan's horns, and eyes that look out on the world, at the people he despised and the people that he scorns. And how I wish that Lincoln were dead instead of me brothers and all the others arriving in America, not to shirk, but just to work and be again well fed.
Tom, you're quite a poet, my friend. I am so honored to know you.
Well, thank you.
We've known each other a pretty long time now.
Yeah.
All those years in the Tea Party and the 9/11 group, and over the years at County Council fighting tooth and nail against these people that want to take control of us. And,
well, even if we lose, it's something for us. Something might turn up out of it all, and there'll be a place for some kind of leadership. We might be old and walking around on crutches, but we might be somebody who can tell people what's what.
Yeah.
We've been there. We've done that. We know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of the way I look at it, too, and people ask me why I do this kind of stuff and the videos and all, and I said, because I want to leave a record. I want to leave a record so that people can go back and they can see the progression of what was happening and what we did to try to stop it, to try to make people aware of it. And hopefully that'll guide somebody in the future. I often say it's not about me anymore. Mm-hmm. It's about my kids and their kids. Because, hell, I'm old, you're old, you know. We're not going to be around that much longer. But
well, we could see a big change just any time.
Yeah.
With Russia fighting in Ukraine against NATO, and the U.S. is NATO.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to shortwave programs that suggest that it's just around the corner, war with Russia.
Yeah.
They'll turn everything loose. There won't be no limited nuclear exchange. It'll be all at once.
Yeah, and that you see the Mideast, you see Ukraine, you see little conflicts picking on in Taiwan with the army people less than 15 miles away from China. The world's a scary place at this point.
Yeah.
And we're just here saying, you know, let's step back. Let's go back to original principles of limited government and maximum liberty.
Mm-hmm. Can't do it. The so-and-sos won't let you.
Yeah.
They're making war on us. They have been for a while.
Yeah.
And it's getting more, it was smoldering for a long time. Now it's not smoldering so much anymore. It's coming to flame. But I don't think Putin wants war with the U.S. because he's afraid of China. He knows he's going to have to fight China someday. He will. China will take everything they can get. So Putin would like for the U.S. to side with Russia when that happens. We need something left. I don't know. Maybe he'll win in the Ukraine, and we won't ever have a nuclear war. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I suspect he's looking out for our interests too, in a way, because he'll need us.
Yeah. The geopolitical ebb and tide right now. You don't know which way it's going to go, and there's nothing that we can do about that part of it at all.
Enjoy it.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah, well, just sit back and watch.
Yeah.
And I often joke that if a nuclear exchange starts and everything, I'm heading straight to Fort Jackson. And somebody said, well, why are you doing that? That's a target. I said, exactly.
Okay. Well, you don't want to suffer.
Yeah. You know, head toward the light this time, fellas.
No, I want to survive it because there's things I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to take up. I'm not a hunter. I don't like killing deer. But I don't know. When something changes.
That's right. Well, you'll be able to. It'll be easy to get. Deer will be easy to get. They'll glow in the dark.
Okay. So. Well, I won't be hunting little deer.
Yeah.
Poor little deer.
Tom, I enjoyed it, my friend.
Yeah.
Me too. Thank you for coming, and thank you for the poems. You always put them together, and they always make me smile, even when they're about Kamala and Joe.
Well, we have a black woman in in the John Birch Society now. She is a go-getter.
Krishanda.
Yeah, she's really energetic. She's very conservative, very in favor of personal freedom.
Mm-hmm.
She asked me at the last meeting how she could get to be my secretary, or the secretary for the John Birch Society.
Right.
And I said, well, I guess you are.
You are.
I didn't have to sign anything. I just say, Krishanda is the secretary, and yeah. She's it.
Yeah, I like Krishanda. She's a sweetheart.
Well, she's chairing or sharing and teaching the Constitution as a solution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just the lowly projectionist, but I'm really getting a kick out of it. Krishanda's got so much energy.
Yeah, she does. Yes, she does. And it takes all types. Anybody that wants to get involved in any way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. Whatever talents you have, you can be used. Yeah. You just have to make that choice. You have to make that first step. And ladies and gentlemen, there's plenty to do.
Yep, there is.
We need you.
Yep.
So, thanks, Tom.
All right, good.
If a government claims a right, and then their claim is that they derive these rights from the people,
right?
Well, how can people give a group rights that they don't themselves have?
To steal from each other.
Right, if we can't tax people, like I can't tax you, where exactly does government derive this right from? You realize that the goal ought to be as voluntary a society as possible. Now, how exactly you achieve that, how far you can push that is debatable, but certainly that should be the goal. That if government is providing a service for you, well then why does it need to be provided by force?